Thank you.
There are many ways to learn. You can be an audio learner. You can learn through the School of Hard Knocks. You can be a visual learner. You can do all kinds of things and learn all kinds of things from books, but there are some things that just are not taught in books. And some skills that are so critical to survival in today's world that if we aren't teaching them to our kids, we are setting them up for a lot of the School of Hard Knocks later on. So we need to realize that, number one, life is a classroom, not just the classroom, but all of life. And that there are lessons all the time being taught, whether it's relational lessons, whether it's physical lessons, whether it's financial lessons. They're being taught all the time, and we need to help our kids capture those and create a laboratory in our homes where they're able to learn in small steps these areas of life. So there, we've identified 8 areas for this talk, and I'm sure there are more that you could probably help us identify, but 8 areas that we really need to focus on to help our kids be prepared to stand independently in the real world.
The first one is organization and priorities. And we, obviously, it's better if you start kids young, how to organize their toys, picking up, making their room in an orderly fashion, organizing their clothes in the closets and the drawers, even organizing their workspace for school, all their school materials, even organizing the computer if they're older and they're using stuff on the computer. Those are all important things that they need to do. And then as they get older, organization is super important in their teen years. We have a weekly family staff meeting where we talk about the week. We mentioned that already today. And kids are taught to plan ahead, to think ahead. There's no last minute, I need a treat for something, I need a present for something. That just doesn't happen at our house. Those kinds of things are talked about way in advance, and usually it's not really a difficult thing to work through.
Now, I was standing down here after our last talk, and there was a young guy. He's probably about 8 years old. I don't know if he's in here. But I asked him, I said, what do your parents say you're really good at? And he kind of scrunched up his face, and he didn't know right away. I said, well, aren't there things they say you're good at? He says, well, whenever my mom gets something new, she asks me to organize it. And I thought, wow, at 8 years old. And isn't it true that you look at your kids and at some ages you can see those characteristics, and as they get older, it really turns out that way. Like our daughter Abby, when she was really young, she used to take her crayons and she used to line them up in just neat rows. And we thought, this is weird. We never had any of our kids do this before.
Well,
What's with that?
She was so anal about the Tupperware closet. There was just something about the Tupperware closet.
She loved to organize
and
it.
How it had to be organized. And so she ended up with the top rack of the dishwasher as her job. And it was like, don't touch my Tupperware closet. If there's Tupperware that needs to be put away, I'll take care of it. We're like, fine.
And now that she's 19, she organizes fundraisers. She organizes a workout gym. She organizes groups of people. You see, she started young with a habit, and now she's perfected it. But the truth is, we all need organizational skills. Even a right-brain creative like me, who doesn't know what time it is, can't stay focused on a project, I'm ADD, I have had to learn to focus. And we really need to teach that to our kids, because an unfocused young child, that can kind of be accepted by society. But an unfocused adult won't get very far. So teaching them to organize their things and their thoughts, that's a habit we need to instill in our
kids.
And
if this is something that you struggle with, it's okay. You don't have to have mastered this to be teaching it with your kids. Struggle through it yourself and tell your kids, look, I am struggling with this. I don't want you to have this struggle that I have. I want you to get a grip on this early in your life. So we're going to work through this together. I'm going to keep working on mine, and I want you to learn and keep working on yours.
Right. So some of the little things we did was teaching them to manage finances, and they learned to organize their finances in a 3-part bank. Teaching them with a wish list to write things down that they wanted.
Okay, the next thing we talk about is appearance. And you know, you may think this is a given, and it could be a given, but out there in the world that we live in today, it's not a given. And I think boys struggle with this a little bit more than girls. If they're not an athlete, and then they're going to struggle with like brushing their hair. Yes, a hairbrush is for hair, and or combing their hair, and the kind of, you know, clothes that they wear. So we have a part of our Money Smart Kids system here is the morning point, which is working on your personal hygiene and looking, you know, making sure those things are done, your clothes are appropriate, and you've washed your face and you've brushed your teeth and you've combed your hair, that kind of thing, is a very important skill to teach our kids. Now, there's a book out there called Unchristian, and I read it. I love to read books. And it said that 54% of all young adults today, homeschoolers may not have quite this same percentage, but 54% of the average young adults in our society are going to alter their appearance in some way. So we're talking tattoos, piercings, hair coloring, hairstyles. And I know homeschoolers are not as susceptible to this, but you may have one. We do. We have one that wants to test all the boundaries at home. And so we've had to really work through. Yeah, that's
remember
true.
Remember that Christmas picture where John had blonde hair?
Yes. And so he wanted to dye his hair.
We don't have blonde-haired kids.
And my encouragement to you today is don't panic about this, okay? This is, you know, I was kind of panicked about this at first. And really the truth is you want to look at your kids' hearts, not at how they're trying to figure out society, fit in society, figure out who they are. This is not a panic situation, and it doesn't require harsh consequences. It doesn't. It means nothing, you all. It really does. Let him run it out of their system. Like Steve said, our oldest son went through a phase in his teen years where he just thought he needed to dye his hair. I even helped him do it. And you know what? He's 30 now. Does he dye his hair? Not at all. It just worked right out of him, you know? I let him just kind of sow his oats for a little bit, and it's too much of a bother now. So don't freak out if your kids do this. And look at their hearts. Look at what's going on inside of them. If they're doing these things because their hearts are hurting and there's some things maybe y'all need to look at as a family, then look at those. Then take that, look at that as a symptom or a signal that maybe there's some stuff going on that maybe needs to be addressed. If you've got a kid that's just really solid emotionally and spiritually and they just want to mess around, it's okay. Clothes are another thing. And once again, you guys out here have, like, incredibly strong family values. We live on the West Coast, okay? We're real close to Hollywood, okay? We live in Scottsdale. It's a very affluent city. And so we probably struggle with this a whole lot more than you all struggle with out here.
There was a young man on the plane. We flew from Phoenix to L.A. and L.A. to here. He had leopard hair.
And painted blue toenails. Okay? So
yeah, it's kind of bizarre.
So, you know, we have to look deeper than what people look like on the outside. We have to love them because of their hearts. And we have to realize some of them are hurting. And that's what we need to teach our kids. So what is God's standard? What is society's standard? You know, is it a sin issue? Is it just trying to figure out their place in the world? With our girls, we've really had to work, at least the one that kind of pushes all the buttons and all the limits. We've had to really work with her on modesty issues. I've given her lots of books on that. There's some wonderful books out there to talk about that.
And now that she has a boyfriend, and I've talked to the boyfriend about purity, and they both have been committed to be pure until they're married, whether they marry each other or somebody else. He said to her, Abby, when you wear this, I have a hard time keeping my eyes in the right place.
And
that affected her. Because we could tell her all we wanted, but she didn't realize until somebody who valued her differently than we do said it, the power of what she dressed.
And Colin said, Abby, please help me.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, my gosh. And so she's like, Mom, I have to go shopping. And I'm like, okay, when do we want to do that, you know? And so that's a really awesome thing when you have that going on. Start young with clothes. At least clothes can be an issue for some kids, especially if you have a strong-willed child. I don't know if any of you have that.
No,
you know,
not
we,
here.
We had five, and three out of our five were strong-willed. Where did they get that
from? We don't have any idea where they got it from.
Because we're just meek and mild. The two of us are just meek and mild. So I don't know how we ended up with three strong-willed children. Anyway, so what we say is shared control when they're younger. basically, when they're little, mom picks out two or three outfits, and then they get to choose. So they feel like they still have some control, but mom is like, okay, any one of these three is going to be fine. But then, obviously, as they get older, you need to let them be taking more and more of the reins on that. And for my little Abby, who is just a hot wire, there were times when we sent her back into the house. We're not going with what you've got on. Go change those clothes. So
those were hot mornings, let me tell you. But we got through them. And the relationship stayed intact, but that was tense at times.
Right.
But, you know, we set a standard that if it doesn't pass muster with mom and dad, you can't go out that way. And we didn't want to create that rebellious heart that says, oh, yeah, well, I'll just put this on and I'll take it off when I go outside. And we have to be really careful. And we pray like crazy for our kids because we don't want to handcuff them. We don't want to wound them. We want to empower them.
Right. And guys can oftentimes pick T-shirts that have kind of off-color sayings or, you know, I think the phase of the falling off the pants.
Is that still going on?
I think we're past that. I hope we're past that. I don't know. But, you know, you can
I've
work on that.
I've seen enough plaid underwear to last me a lifetime.
you know, just keep working on it. If these are issues with your kids, just keep working on
them.
What
we tell parents, and it's not such an issue here, but we tell parents to lead by example. And there in some of our churches in Phoenix, there are some moms that dress like teenagers. And you can't hold your daughters to a standard if you aren't living them. And dads, if you dress like a, you know, you can't expect your kids to dress for success.
Right.
So we've got to set the example. We've got to be willing to fall under the rules that we expect our kids to.
Right. There's a book out there called Dress for Success. And I read that back when Steve was a young career person. And there's a lot of merit to that book. It's a very old book. You can find it online. You can find it at used bookstores. And it talks about how there was a study done with a guy at an airport. And he had a suit on and a dress shirt and a tie. And he had to beg for money for a ride. And the guy that wore the tie got twice as much money as the guy that didn't have a tie on. And it just says, in our society, we have to be preparing our kids for what's out there. Even though we all know, that the heart is the most important thing, we live in a culture that says how you look is very important.
So when you take a child who's 16 years old and wants to get a job, how does this apply? And what we do is we take our kid to the store that they want to apply at before they ever apply. We say, see how they're dressing? That's how you need to dress, but you need to dress one step better. So when you go in, you're dressed appropriately. Okay, so that's hygiene, that's dressing, that's an important skill for them to have before they go out into the workplace. How about clothes? Oh, no. We talked about clothes.
Yes.
How about skipping clothes? Wait, I got to go back. Guess which one's Abby? Ta-da! Okay. Joe's in the middle, and Becky's on the right side. That was when we shot for Dr. Phil. Manners. Boy, you know, we all talk about, you know, what's the magic word? Say please and thank you. Okay, we got that down. But is there more to manners than just the please and thank you? And we think there is. And there's something we need to be paying attention to. It's social skills. I was reading a book once. I can't remember if it was What Color Is Your Parachute or the Job Hunting Executive Guide. Mm-hmm. One of the two of them said that there was a CPA company that would hire their junior executives right out of college. But they had several interviews in the process, but one part of the interview that was kind of a surprise.
It was unbeknownst to the person who was being interviewed.
Was that they had dinner at a very fancy country club with one of the senior partners. And the interview process was not so much what they talked about, but watching the person and how they behaved at the table. Because, you see, these were CPAs dealing with high net worth individuals, and there's a very good likelihood that this person they were going to hire would eventually meet with the clients and actually have a dinner with them. And if they didn't eat like an executive did, that would create a barrier in their communication. If they ate like George of the Jungle, that'd be a problem, right?
So and we have
can
had,
you believe that?
I yeah, mean,
that,
and
but
we,
that's real
we
life.
We have had young adults over to our home that really didn't understand basic table manners because their families never ate dinner together. Okay, we know a young adult where they don't even use cups, they just use water bottles.
Or drink out of the milk carton.
I mean, they don't...
What's wrong with
that? You know, they don't understand, you know, just how to set the table. our culture is losing some of these basic things.
This really came home to us when we were speaking a couple months ago at Indiana University at a conference on health, nutrition, and poverty. And we met with some people of the group called Circles Out of Poverty. And they said the reason that a lot of people end up in generational poverty is because they speak, let's call it the lower class language, but they don't know how to speak middle class. They don't know how to carry themselves. They don't know the unwritten rules of the middle class. Well, isn't that what we need to teach our children? And proper manners, shaking someone's hand and looking them in the eyes, having a firm handshake, that's simple manner.
Introducing your friend, whoever's with you, to whoever you're greeting, very important.
Writing thank you notes to TV executives who have us on their shows, to people who give you gifts, to people you had an interview with, that's part of the middle class.
Looking people right in the eye. So when you greet them, you look at them.
If somebody says, how are you doing? You say, fine, and how are you? Ask them a question back. Now, you know, that's real basic, but are we teaching that to our children? It's so unbasic that there's a guy named Mr. Clark, who was National Teacher of the Year. He wrote a book, Mr. Clark's Sacred 55.
Or 55 Rules for the Classroom, I think. And he worked as a teacher in the inner city in New York.
And he said, if I give you something and you don't say thank you, I'm taking it back. If I ask you a question and you don't ask me a question in return, we've got a problem. We're going to have to work on that. And they said that the principal of the school came to him and said, did some of your students come into our PTA meeting last night? And he said, yes. He said, we knew it. Because whenever they stood up to talk and they were asked a question, they asked a question of the board member in return. It works. We need to teach the kids these lessons.
Another thing we've taught our kids is to greet adults as Mr. and Mrs. And I know a lot of people say today just use first names, but we are still in a respectful way doing the Mr. and Mrs. And when Abby met her boyfriend's parents for the first time, she greeted them as Mr. and Mrs. And Colin's dad went, oh, my gosh, she just called me Mr. Nevitt. I can't believe it. So scored points there. And it's just a respectful way. When Becky was first working at Barnes & Noble, her managers would ask her to do something, and she would say, yes, sir. And finally, this one manager said, Becky, you are not a slave, and I am not a master. Don't call me sir anymore, you know? And so it was just so ingrained in her to greet with respect that, you know, once you're given permission, you can do something differently, but it's just a good thing to teach our kids.
So, teaching manners, an important rule, important tool to teach our kids to stand in the real world.
Faith is another thing that is super important to hand the baton.
But this is going to be a little different than what you expect.
Yeah.
We know that you guys are faith-based. We know that you love the Lord and you want your kids to love the Lord. Stay with us on this, and don't walk out, please.
Right. I've heard that I think the number is getting close to 75% of young adults are leaving the church today. They're not staying in the church. So just because you have devotionals or you do Christian things in your home doesn't mean that the baton is actually getting passed and your kids are making their faith their own. And you know, we have failed in a lot of ways in this, and that's why we're standing here and we're making the call to you. We could have done things better. We have a prodigal that's out in left field right now. And yes, he has some issues. He was adopted. He was abused. But I think we could have done things differently to help that situation. So when kids are younger, talk. Be communicating with them all the time. Our kids, we don't go there now, but we had attended a small denominational church, and our kids went to Sunday school one time. Our younger two, Joe and Abby, were in the same class, and the teacher was telling them that in this particular denomination, they believe that if the parents were not believers and they had a baby and that baby died, that baby was going to hell. And our kids were unglued. They came running to us right after their Sunday school class. They shared with us immediately because we had an open thing, you know, an open forum of communication. They were upset. They came to us. We were upset. We found an elder that was a friend of ours, and he facilitated a meeting after church with their Sunday school teacher and our kids and us. And our elder was there that was a dear friend.
And the cool thing was that they were given the opportunity to learn how to lovingly confront and express their disagreement over a theological issue without being condemned. See, we need to teach them, and we're going to come to this in a little bit, but they need to be able to respectfully question authority.
Right. And so what was cool with that is, as a resolution, the Sunday school teacher said, you know, you've really brought up some very good and very strong points, and I'm going to have to think through this and revisit this issue for my own life. So I thought that was a victory for our kids. And our kids walked out of there, and we affirmed them, and it was just a really good thing.
But our kids are going to be out in the world, and we can't keep them in a bubble, and they're going to encounter situations like this. Becky works at Barnes & Noble, and the manager of Barnes & Noble is homosexual, and he tends to hire other people who are homosexuals. Now, is she going to stop working there? Well, she's made a choice. And there was one day when a female co-worker who happens to be homosexual
was hitting on Becky because she was lesbian. And she asked Becky if she'd go to this club in Phoenix and do boxing with her. And Becky said, no, thank you. You know, no, not really. That's not for me.
Not condemning her.
And this gal was just so curious about Becky. She kept coming back to her. And a few weeks later, she said to Becky, I bet you bet I'm going to hell, don't you? And I thought Becky had a kind and insightful response. She said, your lifestyle is your decision. What determines whether you go to heaven or hell is whether you accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. Because that's the first step.
How can we prepare our kids, though, to be in those situations? And that's what we're talking about. We've got to equip them. So as we ran a young adults group at our church for a while, and we reached out to unchurched, and we had some pretty interesting people show up. And that's where, under our observation and supervision, our kids learn to relate to non-Christians. But we've got to do that thoughtfully. There was a New Year's Eve party we had just this last year where Joe works at Barnes & Noble, but he also reaches out to other people. And he had these guys over that...
There were about 10 guys in our house. And even some of the guys, he did work with the youth group for a time at the church where we are now. And even the kids that were coming from the youth group, there was a guy that was like a video game addict, and he was planning on staying
World of Warcraft
all night long playing video games.
So we have a rule in our house that at night technology is docked. So I was kind of concerned about saying anything because I'm the avoider, you know. But Annette came up and said, hey, guys, it's 2 o'clock in the morning.
The party's over.
We had a great time. You guys are sleeping here in the living room. You got your sleeping bags all set up. We have a rule at our house that all technology gets docked in the living room.
In the dining room.
And
that includes, you know, phones, laptops, tablets, iPods, anything.
You
should have seen our dining room table. I wish so bad I had taken a picture.
It looked like an ATF raid.
Just rows of stuff. And this kid that was planning on staying up all night and playing video games actually got a good night's sleep for once in his life.
Because he laid down and slept. Next morning we baked this big pancake breakfast. They all helped. It's like they'd never been part of a family before. They were just left to do their own thing. You know?
And the church is not immune to this. Homeschoolers may be different, but the church folks out there where their kids are out in the public schools and stuff, they've lost the deep family values that a lot of us as homeschoolers cling to. So don't be afraid of exposing your kids to what's out there. It's better to do that. I understand that we need to shield them and protect them when they're younger. But the teenage years should be the time when you start exposing them to that stuff. They have to be knowing how to deal with it. And like,
we need to tell one more story.
Okay.
Because this is why it's so serious. We're on a camping trip with some friends of ours, and one of them is a doctor. We've known him for years, he and his wife. Frugal, beautiful, loving Christian parents. They had a son who went to medical school and came out a girl.
The head of the medical school was a transsexual and convinced this guy that he should be one too.
Now, how do these parents relate to their son, daughter? They still love her, but that, you talk about a struggle. You talk about having to walk through hell. What about the siblings? How do they deal with it? Do they still accept them? Is this somebody Jesus still died for? You bet. But this child, for some reason, was not prepared to enter this world and was swayed because of some wounds or some hurts inside that just couldn't be resolved. These people are the most loving parents you would have ever seen. Look, we've gone through pain too with some of our kids. And we've been told by counselors, you guys have done it. We haven't done it perfectly. They're going to make their own choices. We just need to pray, but we've got to prepare them.
Right.
As best we can.
And the teenage years are the perfect time because they're still in your home. So you're walking alongside of them. You just got to make sure they're talking to you. If they stop talking to you, you've got to do whatever you can to open up that conduit to keep that communication going. Because as long as the communication's there, they'll come to you, they'll talk about all these things that they're experiencing, and you can help them walk through that. Okay, the fifth trait for launching a kid into the real world is financial responsibility. And several of you have been at our other seminars, so you have heard this, so we're just going to real quick go through an overview.
I'm going to take it a slightly different way. But we start teaching our kids young to handle little bits of money. As they get older, they handle more money. We teach them that working equals earning. And over time, if they're faithful, they will earn more. And that's just a life principle God set in motion. It's true in every culture. But here's the thing where we really get scary. And we aren't doing the seminar here, so I want to bring this up. When we take a young child and they turn 18 years old and we send them off to college, and the most they've ever earned is $4,000 a year, and we help them, like 60% of students are doing, borrow money to go into college when they've never signed a contract or anything, they've never borrowed money once in their life, they haven't had a full-time job, they don't have a certain career path, and we're signing them up for $60,000 worth of loans, which for a $50,000 income household is like signing up for a $625,000 loan. Can you imagine putting that on the shoulders of an 18-year-old?
And even if you send your kids to a Christian college, it does not mean that they will not be exposed to the yuck that is out there. Because our son played baseball. We're homeschoolers. But in our state, he could play baseball at the public school. So he played a year of baseball at the public school before he went off to Christian college and played baseball there. Hmm. And he said that the dugout at the Christian college was worse than the dugout at the public high school. Okay, so if you think Christian college is, you know, anemic and pure, you had better think again.
But they're all we're talking about finances.
I'm sorry, I got off on that.
But okay. There is going to be pressure for them to borrow money, and we need to have them ready to spend and stand firm for their faith, even at a Christian school. And, you know, even Christian schools, their finance counselors will encourage you to borrow money. We need to train our kids, and we need to be secure in saying, is God providing, or are we running to the bank? And is borrowing the way it's supposed to be done?
And this book has a whole chapter on college stuff, how to pay for college, basically how to go to college almost for free. And there's a book out there with that name by Ben Kaplan, which is an excellent resource, as well as it's our largest chapter in this book. So if you have kids that are in their teenage years and you're trying to figure out what to do about college, I really recommend that you get this.
But our bottom line goal with our kids was to teach them by example that they can get the things that they need and they want if they're patient, if they're willing to save, if they're willing to wait for God to provide it. And it happens all the time.
And if you don't have a system for teaching your kids in little bits over time how to handle money, we've got that also. And we recommend, you don't have to use ours, just make sure you have a system so that you are actually getting money into their hands on a weekly basis and they are learning how to manage it.
Okay.
Research is the sixth topic that we want to talk about today, and it's the sixth skill that is absolutely essential for them to be successful when they leave your home. You know, there's a slogan out there that says 15 minutes could save you more than 15%. Well, the research skills that we have developed in our home will save much more than 15%. That's nothing at our house, okay? So college textbooks, for example. You know, our son, the college textbook that he was supposed to buy was $145. He researched it. We have several resources for that online. He found it for $8. Okay? Let's see. We talk about better quality for the least amount of money. That's what we're all about. That's what we want to teach our kids. That just because you see something, even if it looks like it's a little bit on sale, do some more research. Because you might be able to find it for a fraction of the cost. There are always options for researching things, and it's important to teach our kids how to find the resources to get that. Why don't you talk about this
one? First, I want to back up, and I want to say another thing we neglected teaching our kids. We did it ourselves, but we needed to do this more, and so we're kind of having to retrench now, is that digging into God's Word, researching what He says about topics, is so critical, such a critical skill. Because if we don't go back to God to find the answers, we leave it to pop psychology or to just how we feel, we're going to go off track. And so digging in the Word is a research skill that will serve our kids well. Abby just recently, she's 19, we have a family computer that she could use for school, and they have computers at school that she could use, but she wanted her own laptop. Now, because she's researched so many things in the past, she knew exactly what vehicles to use to research it. It took her 1 week. She found the MacBook that she wanted, a white MacBook, the right speed and everything. She had the money saved. She'd saved for several months. She paid $500 for it. And I just checked her out to see if she'd done her research thoroughly. So I went to a source that resells computers, and I found the same computer she paid $500 for being sold for $750. So she got a great deal. We set it up and everything. You know, she felt really proud of herself. But I was proud. But, you know, because she's researched so many things, it took very little time for her to do it. She's become an expert researcher.
And there was a time, I hate to be bragging on our kids like that, but we are pretty proud of them. And there was a time when Abby wanted a trampoline. But she didn't want to buy one new, so she started looking on Craigslist. Because it's so big, you don't want to have to pay shipping charges for a trampoline on eBay. And sure enough, she spent a few weeks researching it, found out she could get a used trampoline with a, you know, a
enclosure
for about $150. So she started squirreling her money away because she was pretty sure she wanted this. And then all of a sudden one day we got an email. I was involved in the music ministry at our church, and an email came in and it said, "This all to everybody that participated in the music ministry, we have a lady in our church that's moving. And she'd like to get rid of a trampoline that's in her backyard. If somebody will come and get it, they can have it for free." So I went to Abby. She was like, "Is this real or is this spam?" I read it again. I'm like, "It's real." So we're like, "Abby." Abby comes running in. We're like, "Look at this." She's like, "Ah!" Abby doesn't do anything quietly. She starts jumping up and down and screaming. And so we got the trampoline, and she took her money and put that towards the laptop rather than the trampoline came first, laptop came second.
So she learned research and patience. Look, there are all kinds of other things that our kids need to learn to research. If they're going to do a career, if they're going to go to school for a specific mm-hmm. career, is it right for them at 18 to go full-fledged into that career, or should they do some research years before to see if they're even interested in it?
Right.
We did this with Becky. She wanted to be a veterinarian. At least she thought she did because she loves animals. So we said, okay, you're 16 years old. We called around to different vet offices in our area and found one she could volunteer at. She went in, spent a few weeks during the summer.
Actually, it was several months where she just went once a week. And after several months of being there, she said, "I don't want to be a veterinarian, Mom. All they do is spay and neuter all day long." She said, "This is not my idea."
I stood there for one, and I saw a cat fully anesthetized. Oh, boy. He groaned when they did it, let me tell you. And he was out.
Okay.
I couldn't take it.
But that was a good thing. That was one thing she could just cross off her list. And she said, "I don't want to do this." We know another young man who spent 4 years at a university getting a physics degree. And when he was done, after 4 years, he's like, "I don't want to do that for a living." Well, he had just spent 4 years getting a degree. So it's really important. The teenage years are a really important time for you to be talking about your kids, getting to know your kids.
Helping them research their future.
Yeah, even if they think they want to do something, let them volunteer so that they can figure this out.
These are just a few of the things we put on here. Abby researched an American Girl doll, her computer, school textbooks. There's so many things you can save money on and teach them to research. Okay, the balance between work and play. We need to teach our kids to work. You know the Bible verse that says, as a door turns on its hinges, do you know what it says after that? So the sluggard turns on his bed. Now, God's word usually presents his will. Larry Burkett used to say it's like the channels of a river, one extreme to the other. So here's the sluggard. He doesn't get out of bed, right? You know what the other extreme is? The workaholic. It's vain to rise early, to go to bed late, to eat the bread of painful labor, because God gives to his beloved even in their sleep. So he said somewhere in the middle is where God is going to call you. But it may be over here for a little while. You may need to rest. Or over here for a little while, you may need to work really hard. But it's a matter of viewing work in terms of where God is calling you. But we need to teach our kids to work. We are seeing a terrible phenomenon right now where a lot of young men, and we pray it doesn't come out of homeschool homes, are so entrenched and addicted to video games that they aren't waking up to be young men until they're about 30 years old.
Nothing can compete with the adrenaline rush of video games. Nothing. So you need to do your research really carefully and find out what they're playing and how much time they're spending playing. And just saying you can play once you get your schoolwork done is not good. Because the adrenaline rush is so addictive, they'll rush to get their schoolwork done. And they may even do it excellently, but they still should not be spending hours playing video games. And if there's some young dads in here and this is an issue in your life, we are pleading with you to examine that, to
pray for release.
Yeah, to really think about how that's affecting your home and your children and your marriage and all that stuff.
Now, in our home, to help our kids manage this, what we did is we created what was called the TV computer time chart. And we gave them 3 hours a week. They could watch TV. They could choose to watch TV or play on computer for 3 hours, and that was it. And it encouraged them to read books. It encouraged them to go outside and play games. It also gave them plenty of time to do chores. But you've got to come up with a philosophy, because this is a tool or a life skill that if it is not harnessed when they're younger, they can easily go way off when they get into the college years. Okay, this is probably the most important area. Oh, this is working in the yard. There's a study on our website. The Kaiser Foundation talked about screen time with young kids. And you need to look at the study. You can download. Just look for Kaiser Foundation on our website. But there's so much evidence that too much screen time too young is dangerous to the developing mind and addictive to kids. We just got to stop it. So we do chores in our backyard, and we cut trees down, and we rake, and we do all kinds of stuff. But we've got to be working with our kids and getting them away from the TV.
The final, and I think one of the most important things to topics to teach your children is discernment. Hebrews 5:14 says, solid food is for the mature who because of practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil. You know, it's really scary when you think about how much we teach our kids to obey. I mean, that's a good thing when somebody loving and caring is on the other side of that. But the churches teach us to follow without question. Some homeschool families teach their kids to follow without question. And I promise you, if that's who your kids are, they're going to get demolished when they get outside in the real world. Because not everybody should be trusted. And there is a difference between being respectful to somebody and trusting them. Okay, there's a difference. And we have to be teaching our kids that difference. You know, the Bible pictures us as sheep. Talk about that for a minute.
We went to a church for a while where we couldn't tell why we were being attacked as we were leading a young adults group. And we thought it was some of the leadership. We didn't quite understand why. And it turned out in Ezekiel, there's talk about a good shepherd, and then there's a shepherd who muddies the water for the sheep. And he devours the food for the sheep. And we're seeing more and more in small churches and some larger churches where the shepherds are wounded and they're taking it out on the sheep. And we need to follow the good shepherd. And through through training, through practice, have our senses trained to discern good and evil. Annette, remember I told you about the little boy here who is 7 or 8 years old? His mom already sees that he's an organizer. That's a gift from God. But we can all learn organizational skills. Annette has this gift of discernment, and I hate it, but I love it. Because there have been 5 specific times in my life when she's identified a schnook, an evil person who looked so good on the outside and took advantage of us or me, and she saw it months before I did.
Okay, you know,
now, guys, some of you have wives that are the same way, and it gets annoying when they're right. But it's God's gift to protect us. And some of you wives have husbands that do the same thing, right? I mean,
it can be reversed.
It can be reversed. Either way. But, you know, it's not good for man to be alone. Man has gaps. And so he gets married to someone who's opposite.
We're designed to fill
the gaps.
God has a sick sense of humor sometimes. Putting opposites together like that constantly. I mean, come on, really?
But if I realize, and this is something, you know, I'm 55 years old, we've been married 31 years, and I'm just learning this now, I'm in slow class, okay? She's a gift to me from God. She's on my team, and I can trust her. And if more guys can say that, well, we can go incredible places with the Lord and with our families.
We're running out of time. Okay, so we have seen things in our kids' lives. I mean, seriously. Okay, like in the scout troop. I'm just going to give you real fast examples. In the scout troop, there was one man holding 3 positions. I said, bad news, dear. Red flag,
oh,
red
no,
flag.
He's a good guy.
Red flag, red flag. Well, another dad saw the same thing. He came in, put on a uniform, restructured the whole troop. He was living off of the kitty. This one man was living off of the kitty.
Later on,
in the scout
pastor
troop.
Who was the sponsor of the troop told this man, either you get out or I'm calling the police.
Yeah, okay, we've seen it. We've seen it in a 4-H club. We've seen it in Civil Air,
Air Force Explorers.
Air Force Explorers. The guy was living off the kitty and making the kids pay all these dues and the stuff just didn't arrive that they were paying for.
And these were opportunities for us to instruct our kids. As we started seeing this regularly in leadership positions, instruct our kids to, okay, you can be in this group, but you need to get everything in writing. You need to be very careful. This is teaching them to discern the difference between good and evil.
And really what we're saying also is social media. We need to talk about social media. We have limits for social media. We have all of our kids' passwords. Just the rule. You live in our house, we have your passwords. Okay? There's no absolute question about this. For everything, Pinterest, Foursquare, Twitter, Facebook, whatever else is out there. I can't even keep track of it all. Okay, Steve has passwords stored for all of that stuff. When our daughter first wanted to start Facebook, I think she was 15 or 16. We were so terrified. We were scared. We're like, okay, she's Miss Social Butterfly. Okay, this is the last one. We're always talking about her. We said, okay, you can be on Facebook, but for the first year, no guys, period. The only guys you can have as friends are relatives, okay? And what we said to, I mean, all of our kids, this is the rule for Facebook in our home. You do not have any friends. You do not accept any friends if you have not physically met the person, okay? You are not going to be friends with anybody on Facebook because people can be whoever they want to be on Facebook, okay? So we've got to teach our kids how to be smart about this. You can't just say don't do it because that doesn't prepare them for the real world.
Okay? Next story. There's a young gal named Katie. No, this one's serious, guys, and this is real, and we love our daughters, and there are predators out there. Young girl named Katie, single mom, taking care of her, disappeared one day. We prayed with that mom.
For months, she was gone. And this is not a good story, okay? A lot of times, it doesn't end up the way it ended up. A lot of times, the girls don't come home. Katie did come home, like 9 months later. And she was a beautiful girl, and we don't have any idea what really happened to her. But we, once again, we live in Phoenix. It is one of the most dangerous cities for kids in the nation. The human trafficking rate in Phoenix is unbelievable.
We listened to a Focus on the Family broadcast about 2 weeks ago, and they have a system out there. It's scary. What they do is they send an older man into a store. And our daughters, we didn't know this was happening, but there have been older men that have started talking to Becky in the stores and Abby in the stores. And here's what they said. They said they sent an older man in to befriend them and just find out information about them.
And gather information about them. So our daughters know when someone starts asking too many questions.
They cut it off.
Nope, they stop it. Our daughters have been trained to go. And this can happen to your son as well. I hate to say that. Okay, if someone starts asking too much personal information, they go find one of the older assistant managers in the store. And now all of the assistant managers at Becky's store realize that the girls can be preyed upon, and they watch the girls now. And when they see a customer that's spending too much time with the girls, they go and they create interference.
But that's only step okay? one. Step two is they send in a football player.
A good-looking football player.
He's been briefed by the old man.
To lure them away from their family.
And you know what's amazing? If your kid's a homeschooler, so is that football player. If your kid is into, you know, playing sports, so was he. Because he knows everything about them.
And you know what, you guys? This isn't just kids from bad homes. These are kids from good homes
that don't know how to discern.
And it can't be counted as kidnapping because they start this process when they're 16 and 17 years old. They start emotionally abusing them, turning them away from their families, promising them great adventure and a new life. And these girls follow them. And so then they go with the football player, say they go from Phoenix to Seattle, and they start exposing them to parties and all kinds of things. In the meantime, they're getting a profile on these kids, and then they're going to sell them to a pimp or into the sex trade. So this is serious. You've got to be talking to your kids about this. Don't ever think this can't happen to me.
But we can't be in fear, but we need to be wise. The children of light are not as shrewd as the children of this world in their dealings. We need to be shrewd. We need to be wise. We need to be preparing them. This is what's out there. We can go through it. We can go through it, but we need to be aware.
So you need to teach your kids to be respectful and kind, but to have very definite boundaries and to recognize red flags. They have to know what a red flag is when someone is talking to them. Very important.
One very last story is our daughter Becky, who's in the booth, was engaged to be married last year to a guy who was not who he said he was. And she came out of it only through prayer of probably 100 people. Her eyes were opened, and she now can spot an abuser a mile away. She has learned because her senses have been trained to discern good and evil.
And this guy looks so good on the outside. He was a doctor. He was homeschooled. He said he was a believer. And he was evil. He was absolutely positively evil, and our daughter got fooled. So,
I want to read one thing. Yeah, we're sheep. Discernment is not a matter of simply telling the difference between right and wrong. Rather, it's telling the difference between right and almost right. Satan is an angel of light. He disguises himself. So, bottom line, we want our kids to be victorious. It's a dangerous world. But it's going to be a dangerous world. It's a dangerous world for us. So we've got to train them with educational skills. We've got to train them with life skills so that they can be kids who know how to organize their things and their thoughts.
How to dress appropriately, to be successful and respected.
They have to have manners that can shine in any situation.
They have to embrace an everyday faith and love others no matter who they are.
They have to have the financial skills to live independently.
They have to know how to gather information and research to get the most value for the least amount of money.
They have to know how to be an excellent worker at home or in the marketplace.
And they need to know how to discern the difference between good, troubled, and evil.
Because these are kids who are prepared for the real world where we live.
Thank you.